going to you.
I'll call to order the General Government Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee. Colleagues, today is May 2nd, 2011, and we're convened for the purposes of public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2060, 2061, 2067, and 3030. And I believe we will end up going in straight order on the agenda in that order, 2060. 2061, 2067, and 3030. So that being said, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2060. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2060 was pre-session filed by the Department of Human Services that authorized the Oregon Employment Department to disclose employment-related information due to the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority to assist the collection of debts. It prohibits subsequent disclosure by the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority to private collection agencies or the use of information other than for collection of debts. The measure has an emergency clause that would take effect upon the signature by the governor and passed by the legislature. The measure has no revenue and no fiscal impact, no amendments in hand, and the measure passed the House on a vote of 60-0. Mr.
All right. Chuck Hibner and Rick Mills. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Shields, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chuck Hibner. I am the administrator of the Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery for the Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority. And with me today is Rick Mills. He's one of our analysts that's here to help us answer any technical questions you may have on this bill. We seek your support for House Bill 2060, which authorizes the Oregon Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority to use employment data of the Oregon Employment Department to recover overpayments. The Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery identifies, verifies, and recovers overpayments to providers and recipients of a number of programs provided by the department and the authority. Our overpayment writing unit and recovery unit use employer and wage data information in the performance of their duties. Currently, overpayment writers do have the authority to use this data, while recovery specialists are not authorized. Our recovery specialists have access to some of the information from alternative sources, but the data from the Employment Department is the most timely, complete, and accurate source of this information, while being one of the least expensive sources as well. This legislation is important because the information it authorizes us to utilize is an important part of our doing our work efficiently, and it helps us provide optimum customer service by allowing us to work with our clients using the best and most current information available. This legislation will also ensure alignment between our business preferences and practices, what other Oregon state agencies are authorized to do, and state and federal statutes. Federal law protects employment data maintained by the Employment Department. However, federal law does grant an exception for a public official in the performance of their duty. There are a number of criteria which need to be met to qualify. One is a clear granting of authority to the public official by state law, hence this legislation. The Employment Department recognizes the need for and importance of this information for recovery of the debts owed to the department and the authority. The Employment Department supports and actually worked with us on drafting this bill to help clarify the information may be released. In fact, it's very similar to the Oregon Department of Transportation's current exception in statute. If you notice in Section N, our proposed Section O is almost identical. That's it. We're here to answer any questions that you may have on the bill and hope you'll see it favorably.
Yes. Questions? All right. Seeing none. Thank you, gentlemen. Would anybody else be interested in testifying on House Bill 2060? If not, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2060 and open a work session on House Bill 2060. Senator George?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2060 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2060 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator George?
I don't see the 18-month, 9-month timelines here to recoup old past debt that we saw in earlier bills.
I'm just kidding you.
Sorry.
I'm a little too serious today. Oh, I'm a little slow on the uptake, too, bringing other bills into this. Do you have an opinion on House Bill 329 or whatever it was? Or Senate Bill 329? Okay. Hopefully there will be no more further discussion, is there? From Senator George, at least. Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Senator
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Bocas?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes, and Senator George will carry that bill on the floor.
Keep my mouth shut.
I'll open a public hearing on House Bill.
It's called instant punishment.
Senator, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2061. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2061 is another bill brought by the Department of Human Services. It authorizes governmental agencies to conduct transactions electronically or to create or retain electronic records or transactions without an individual's consent if the governmental agency regularly relies on electronic records or conducts transactions electronically. The measure has a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, no amendments, and also passed the House on a vote of 60-0.
Wendy Baca and Tony Thomas. I get that right? Okay, great. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Shields and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Wendy Nelson-Baca, and I'm the administrator for the Office of Document Management for DHS, or Department of Human Services, and the Oregon Health Authority. With me today is Tony Thomas. He's the deputy administrator, and he will be here to answer any technical questions that may arise that I can't answer. Today, I am here in support to speak on House Bill 2061, which gives agencies or governmental agencies the ability to conduct transactions by electronic means as long as it's in the course of everyday business. And currently, the department converts over 2 million documents per month into electronic documents from paper. And those documents are typically things like financial records or client applications for health care or the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or formerly known as food stamps. And those documents are done every day by, and it's the Office of Document Management, ODM. What we typically do with those is we turn them into electronic documents from paper. Historically, we used to bring those papers in. Eligibility workers would determine eligibility on them, and then our office would convert them to electronic, and we would race against the clock to try to beat any provider information or questions that came in, as well as client information. Now we are at the front ends of that process. So we are speeding client eligibility along much faster. These images are stored electronically, and they're relied upon by our staff, by authorized DHS staff across the state every day in the course of everyday business. So as part of a concern that we had, the law currently today reads, well, we actually got on November 19th of 2009, we requested an opinion from the Department of Justice, and in that opinion, there were three notes that we made. The first was that Oregon adopted the Uniform Electronic Action, which was UATA, and that provided that any documents that we converted to electronic were legal effect, and they were enforceably in electronic form, so they were not, we didn't have to reproduce paper all of the time for those. The second piece was that the law required records, any records that were in writing, we could reproduce those as long as they were the same. So we have a process called WORM, which is read once, write many times. And so for that, documents are, you can put electronic sticky notes or those other types of things on those, but once a document is imaged, much like you would in a bank, if you were to write a record or write a check, they will image those documents without your permission. They will destroy that record. But that document can never be, unlike a PDF document, it can't be altered. They can reproduce that image. The third piece in the law that we are currently trying to reconcile is that the way the law is currently written, it says in one part of it that we have permission to go ahead and do electronic transactions. In another part of the law, it states that we should try to get permission from individual parties. In some areas, that's easy. If you're dealing with, say, Providence Healthcare or something, you can negotiate that. But with DHS, we have 382 or around there clients. It's very difficult for us to negotiate trying to get permission from each of those clients each time we want to image documents. And so for about 10 years now, we have been imaging all of those documents, processing electronically the documents so that we do serve providers and clients in a much more efficient way. However, we do want to close that loophole that says that we need to try to get permission from them. Now, one of the things that has come up is that there are some folks who are concerned about how are we going to conduct those transactions. One of the concerns has been, are you going to try to communicate by email or other electronic form with clients who may not have access to internet or other types of means? That is not the way that we intend to do business. Really, what we want to do is just image these documents, and for the sole purpose of expediting and reducing the amount of money that DHS and OHA spend on processing applications and other types of financial records. So right now, another thing that we are doing is that the department is required to retain all of the paper. So even though you are imaging records, you have it now in electronic form. But if you consider how many documents we do, over 2 million a month, and you're required to also store that paper in addition to having it electronic, that's a lot of warehouse space. And so what we have been doing is we've been working with Department of Justice and others to be able to destroy those records. Some of the records, depending on their retention schedules with the Secretary of State, can be anywhere from 3 years to 75 years. And that's a long time to keep records. Some, very few, are permanent records. They're usually around adoptions and those types of things. But right now, we're able to and have been destroying those records after 30 days. We have also been in court where those records have been requested, and we've been able to reproduce those in less than 24 hours, either in paper or on a disk electronically for that court system. So with that, I thank you for listening to this testimony, and I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Senator Bocas.
Thank you. You made mention that you destroy the documents after 30 days after they're scanned. So I guess my question, and you can punt to your left, that's why he's sitting there, is what's the business continuity plan, continuation plan in an earthquake? I mean, if we can't access the records, where's our backup at? How do we access those if we don't have paper copies?
Chair and Senator Boquist, we actually have brought with us Curtis Stanka from SDC as one of our technical experts, and would like to invite him up here now and be able to...
Please. Price is right.
Lifeline.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Shields, committee. For the record, my name is Curtis Danka. I'm the Deputy Administrator at the State Data Center. Senator Boquist, to your question around the backups, the data for EDMS is backed up. We have tapes that we store backup copies of records on. We work in conjunction with DHS for all of the agency's data. And we have two copies of that data that we store in the event of either recovery purposes, for example, they can't access the file and they need to get it back, or if there is an emergency, we need to go through our emergency plan. That data is stored, there's a set of tapes stored at the data center here just off of Airport Drive. And there's another set of data that we contract with a facility that's up in Portland that another set of the tapes go through. They work in conjunction with the DR plan that's in place with the state that we work with the agencies on. And we have, it's essentially an insurance type DR plan with a company out of New Jersey called SunGard. And we at the data center have done some disaster recovery tests where we've actually taken those tapes. We've gotten them from the company in Portland. It's called Iron Mountain. There's a regular cycle that we go through with those tapes to make sure that they're available. They maintain a chain of custody as we, if we need to transport those tapes to an alternate site, such as the site in New Jersey that we have a contract with to do that. And we have successfully completed a mainframe disaster recovery test in February, and we're going to be going through the same type of process in New Jersey, where we actually send staff to New Jersey with the tapes that we're going to be going through for the distributed systems, which is essentially the Windows type servers, which is what EDMS falls into. We'll be completing that, I believe, third or fourth quarter of this year.
Follow up? Related to, good answer, by the way. Better than most departments, by the way. Back to the agency itself, if you don't, I guess the only concern, I have no problem with the bill, but the only concern I have is from the agency's perspective is that when you go without electricity, which in a Cascadia earthquake you're going to, that you still have the capability to get out your number two pencil and your yellow dog hair and continue to function, because that's what we will have to do for weeks on end. Now, of course, it will be very optimal because they will walk people out to the other side of the bridges and then send them to New Jersey, and so there'll be data links back and forth, somewhere like that. But I just, as we move into the 21st century, we've got to be prepared to still go into the dinosaur age if we have to, because we unfortunately picked a place to live where we're sitting on the Cascadia fault line. And so it's great to be electronic, it's great to be safe, but you still need to have a pencil as a backup plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the House weighed in on that recently, didn't they?
Yeah, what a dogfight that was.
All right, any other questions? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This committee is very privacy-oriented, so you have a lot of defenders of privacy on the committee. So kind of walk through for us that are always concerned about privacy with electronic data, how we're protected, how we protect the citizens' personal information, how much personal information is actually that could be used for identity theft or anything else that may be collected. How is that protected, or is there even any of the data that would be advantageous to steal from this process? So if you walk through that a little bit, that'd be really helpful.
Senator Shields, Senator George, I can speak to it from the data center perspective, and then perhaps Wendy could speak as far as how that data is managed at the upfront parts. The data that we have stored at the data center, we have many aspects of security to protect what we know. We deal with all the agencies, Department of Revenue, Corrections, all of that data is at the data center. So we have some pretty stringent policies in place with the data center as far as physical security goes. There's multiple levels, two-factor authentication, to physically make sure that the building is secure and doesn't... In fact, the building was designed that way so that we have the maximum amount of physical security possible. In other words, the raised floor part of the data center is in the center of the building and those types of things. The other thing is we have a security team of 12 folks at the data center. Those people primarily manage the firewalls and making sure that we don't have the hack attempts and things get through. I have some statistics that I found are pretty interesting as far as how many threats are thwarted, if you'd like me to go through some of those things. We have approximately 2 million attacks attempt per hour, which relates to about 19.9 billion attempts a year. Those are the attempts that are blocked. 2.2 million network device attacks, which is over 6,000 a day, that we pick those up and try to block those and successfully block those. 2 million viruses and malicious software, so those are that malware and those kinds of things that infect the PCs and those types of things, because those types of security, they're all over the place trying to breach the network and those types of things. We send out 1,500 alerts to agencies for environments that are both in scope and out of scope of the data center. So there's a lot. The data center was designed around keeping that sensitive information. We maintain patch the servers through the consolidation efforts as well. So those are just some of the aspects of how we do everything we possibly can. Now, is that to say that we don't have our threats, that we need to work with the agencies, that there have been times where things have happened and we needed to engage, and we do have the Enterprise Security Office, and we work with the Information Security Office at DHS anytime something does come through as well to make sure that those risks are minimized.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did Senator George have a follow-up?
Thank you. I'm not sure. I'm reassured hearing about the number of attempts. I was going to ask how Oregon compares with other states. I mean, obviously, this is the way of the future, and everyone's going to be doing this eventually. But where are we in terms of implementing all this electronic storage compared with other states?
I ask a question,
both perspectives, I guess, okay. In terms of the security and in terms of what we're storing electronically.
Okay, Chair Shields and Senator Formici. Oregon we did a comparison with Hawaii and Kentucky and many others. It looks like this is kind of the wave of the future. Oregon is probably not one of the leaders, but one of the followers in this particular area for a variety of different reasons. But what we are finding is that as other states are contacting us, particularly Utah was another one that contacted us, and as we started comparing notes about the way that we are doing business in the realm of Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority, it looks like we are no longer falling behind in that area, but at least maintaining with other states, and we are fastly approaching becoming one of the leaders in that area. What we're finding is that most often people have started with financial records, which seems to be maybe in some opinions least risky. For us, what we intended to do was really look at a combination of both financial records and client records, with the reason being that we have so many clients that are coming on to our services now that we needed to find ways to move them along through the systems faster. What we didn't want to see was somebody needing health care or another type of assistance and having to wait 30 to 60 days to get it. It was unacceptable. So we did a pilot program for this, particularly around like the SNAP program, which is formerly food stamps. We did that for a one-year period and found that we saved over $267,000 doing business in this electronic format versus the old paper way. And we do have the ability to fall back to an old pencil. We have ran tests, and at one time, sadly, we had some system issues, had to shut down for a day or two, go back to paper, and we found that our rollback plan worked very well. We also found that the electronic way works so much better. For instance, an example that I can give you is that when an application comes in, if it is for, say, an unborn child of a Spanish-speaking parent, we have the ability for our systems to direct that application directly to a Spanish-speaking worker who can process it much faster. Historically, it used to take us more than a week to get that done.
Thank you. And security?
Chair Shields, Senator Bonamici. The data center has been working with DHS. Originally, imaging and these types of projects were considered out of scope. A lot of bandwidth required to transmit this data over the network to the storage systems at the data center. But we've been working closely with DHS and some of the other agencies. We're actually bringing these types of things in scope. From a data center perspective, we also work with a lot of other states that are Oregon actually is one, the data center in Oregon is one of the more consolidated data centers from a state perspective, and we have been working with other states around the country. Notably, we've been collaborating a lot with Montana. They're bringing up two brand new data centers, and we've been looking for opportunities to collaborate. They're under the same type of regulations because they have similar types of clients and those types of things. So the other component to the imaging and kind of where we stand as compared to the other states, we have been working with like Department of Revenue for their imaging systems are they're popping up a lot. The document management component is an issue that we hope to help solve from a technology component as well as some of the other challenges that exist there with the paper copies and those types of things.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Chris Wilch. Do you want to testify or were you just there just in case? Okay.
All right. Live support.
Okay. Good. Any other further questions for this panel? Are we ready to move on? Senator Bocas, go ahead.
No, I'm good.
All right.
She convinced me.
I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2061 and open a work session on House Bill 2061. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2061 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2061 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator
Bonamici.
Aye. Senator
Bocas. Aye.
Senator
aye.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. And Senator Bonamici, would you carry that?
I'd be pleased to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici will be the carrier. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2061 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2067. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2067 was pre-session filed by the Board of Accountancy. Specifies that information collected during a Board of Accountancy investigation is considered confidential unless a notice is issued for a contested case hearing or the matter is resolved by the Board action or consent order. It permits the Board to disclose that it is conducting an investigation and requires that the Board notify the person being investigated. We have no amendments. The measure has no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact, and the vote in the House is 58-0.
Welcome to the committee. This is Pat Hearn, Ray Johnson, Roy Johnson?
Ray.
And Keith Myers.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Pat Hearn, Executive Director, Oregon Board of Accountancy. Mr. Brennan summarized the bill quite well, and I don't have a lot to add. House Bill 2067 would put the Board of Accountancy on a level playing field with most regulatory agencies in our state government that is providing some limited confidentiality during the period that a complaint is pending the completion of investigation. When the investigation phases over, the information would then be publicly disclosable, so it's not putting a permanent level of secrecy on it in any ways. By joining other agencies, I would point out that all 20 health-related licensing boards, including agencies as diverse as the Oregon Medical Board and the Mortuary and Cemetery Board, have similar provisions in their procedures. And other regulatory agencies, such as the Landscape Architect Board and the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, also have some level of confidentiality in their investigative process. The bill has the full support of the professional association, that is the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, which is whom Mr. Myers is representing. And it has no negative fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is Ray Johnson. I'm Chair of the Oregon Board of Accountancy. I'll be brief in my comments and then available to answer questions. We think that one thing we want to assure the committee is our commitment to the public interest as a regulatory board. We take that very seriously. The fact that the investigation process will remain confidential. We find our experience is probably 45-48% of complaints against licensees are eventually found to have no basis, that the licensee did not violate professional standards. This probably provides some protection to the non-negligent licensee, but I think for people who violate professional standards, we will continue to move forward with all deliberate speed and see that the public is protected. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Keith Myers and Patrick summed up. I'm here as a CPA in public practice in Portland and representing the Oregon Society of CPAs, a membership organization with about 5,000 members here in Oregon, and we're in full support of this legislation.
Questions?
I have a question.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this says that the staff measure summary, and I'm sorry, I didn't find where it says this in the bill, but the staff measure summary says that the board can disclose that it is conducting investigation. So let's say that I wanted to hire a CPA, and I called the board and I said, I just want to know if you're conducting an investigation of the CPA. Would you tell me under this bill? It's my understanding that under the bill, that currently you would tell me, and I could get all the information and documents that have been submitted. But under this bill, if it passes, could you tell me even that you're conducting an investigation?
Chair Shields, Senator Bonamici, yes. The bill provides that we would be able to acknowledge the existence of a pending investigation, but provide nothing further.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, it's interesting that you mentioned the mortuary board. when actually the tables were turned when I had a constituent who was being investigated, that felt like they, the investigation was open-ended and it was really without focus, and they really, the person who was being investigated had a really serious concern with how the investigation was being, was proceeding. And I tried to get some information from the mortuary board. You would have thought that I was trying to get the nuclear launch codes from from the White House. I mean, it was just like a huge wall of secrecy with the AG's office, and they weren't going to tell me a thing, basically, even though the complainant or the person being complained against had signed off and given a waiver. I've been able to get much more information out of DHS on child welfare cases, which seem to be more confidential than how people deal with corpses. So can you help me feel more comfortable that this wouldn't adversely affect a CPA who might be being investigated by, if they didn't agree with the course of the investigation?
Chair Shields, I think what would happen during the course of the investigation, there's a point in where the person would be notified that there's an allegation against them. It would then proceed to our complaints committee. That person has access to our complaints committee during the complaints process. So if there's a complaint against them, the person who's trying to defend themselves has full access to the complaints committee to make their case. That this does not go on in secrecy in that respect. That proceeding would be confidential. The findings of our complaints committee when it comes to the board would then be publicly available. I think that this both strikes a balance between protecting the public and trying to protect the non-negligent licensee. That's the way I'm looking at it. I think if somebody called, if the public member of the public called, we'd say that there's an allegation, but it's still being investigated.
Would you like to comment on?
Mr. Johnson described it as I understood. I have fortunately not been a member of a complaint up to this point in time, knock on wood. But from my understanding of the complaints process, the CPA that's being investigated is normally fully aware and involved in the investigation process.
And you're the president of the CPA Association?
I am not currently. I'm a chair of their legislative process.
Okay, but you're representing
them. I am representing the Oregon Society,
and
yes.
On this bill, have you found that the small shop CPAs have weighed in just as heavily as, say, the CPA at Pacific Corp, or do you feel like the breadth of your membership supports the bill?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I just wanted to get that on the record. All right, thank you. I will. Would anybody else like to testify on House Bill 2067? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2067 and open a work session on House Bill 2067.
Senator George. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2067 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2067 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Yeah.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair
votes aye. Motion passes. Let's see. Senator Monroe, would you be willing to carry this?
Sure.
All right. Senator Monroe will be the carrier. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2067 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3030A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3030 exempts from minimum wage standards certain individuals providing volunteer golf course marshal services. The measure passed the House in a vote of 59-1. The measure has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no amendments before the committee, Mr. Chair.
Bill Perry.
Thank you, Chair Shields, and members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. We brought forward House Bill 3030 at the request of the golf course operators, and I met with them in the interim, and they brought this to my attention. I think that there are some people who were unaware of the law when they were doing some of these volunteer services, and so I spoke to them, and then I tried to reach out to as many people in the interim to make sure. Obviously, those that you know me, if I start asking questions about minimum wage, tend to make some people nervous, and so I tried to make sure that everybody was on board. And if you notice, by the relating clause and others, this is a very, very narrow bill. And when approaching it, I tried to write the language in subsection 16 to make sure that basically no manual labor is being done. If you're doing any labor at all, it kicks you out of the system. This really is limited to start times, speed of play, and course etiquette. Wanted to make sure they didn't get close to a 40-hour week. I tried to make sure as I drafted this that all the potential concerns were met. And it's basically just generally for retired people that want a way to play free golf to allow them to trade some services for it. So I tried to limit it as much as possible. Just to address any potential concerns. So the only thing, when it is dash A, because when drafted by legislative council, they had an exemption to workers' comp and unemployment. DCBS came in the committee and said that they thought it should go to MLAC, and I gave the committee a choice. You can either send me to MLAC or take it out of the bill, and the committee chose to take it out of the bill. So that's why it's dash A. So they took the sections out, exempting them from unemployment and workers' comp. So, with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions except from Senator George.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, didn't we pass a bill like this for ski patrol people a year or two ago?
I have heard that, Senator Monroe, Chair Shields, I have heard that there's a, I guess I didn't study it, I think there are, if I looked on here, there were, but I personally kind of looked at a view of, you know, are they performing labor, and I think in those cases there were some labor performed, so I wasn't aware of that, but I think I've heard some people talk about it, but I don't know when it happened. I don't know, Senator Shields might know, but
no, I do remember from the House side. Was that responsive?
He didn't know.
Yeah. I can look it through here. I'm pretty sure there was something on ski lift operators, but I can't remember where it was.
It's my recollection that they just wanted to get...
Oh, it's actually at the top of the page. Registered National Ski Patrol. So it'd be 20 under the new bill.
Yeah, right here.
I will answer a question from Senator George.
There it is.
Or comments. Anyway.
Comments.
don't kill the bill, George. Don't kill the bill. Choose your words carefully. All right. Bill, one question. Who brought this to you? I mean, the Volunteer Marshals Association?
Yeah, there's... Chair Shields, there's a group of independently operated golf courses that meets on a regular basis, and they asked me to come speak about a host of different issues, and then they came up there, and I told them that if you wanted to do volunteer marshals, I felt it was illegal under the current law, and so they asked me to bring a bill forward.
Okay, so these are members or prospective members of the Restaurant Association?
Yeah, most of them are members. They're just the independent, so they're not the country clubs or some of the others, the independent operators.
Gotcha. All right, thanks. Any further questions about this? All right. I think I'm going to hold on to this one for just a little bit longer, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3030A.
It's got one vote against it from the House, right?
And colleagues will adjourn. Thank you.